good day, everybody. Tim Roberto here from Beachway Therapy Center, and thank you for joining us today, and thank you for your support, and thank you, Beachway, for all you do for our community, and welcome to another episode of a community-based podcast and program. You know, the community is only as good as the members of the community. I'm grateful to Beachway. I'm grateful to our guest today, also my friend, that contributes so much to the community. And it's amazing what I see in the community. And I'm just very fortunate to be here. And I know I kind of introduce the same way every time, because I think certain messages shouldn't waver or they shouldn't take on a different course in this kind of setting anyway. So honored to be here. Thank you, Beachway. Thank you, Paritosh, for being here. And I think it's going to be a phenomenal podcast full of information, recovery, maybe some do's or don'ts, maybe some left turns that take us way out, or maybe a right turn that takes us way out. We've known each other for quite a long time, and he's a very good man. He does a lot of great work at Beachway. And as a facilitator myself at Beachway, like Paritosh, I always hear some great things about him. And prior to, you know, the podcast going live, we were talking about how good it is to hear, you know, from clients feedback about their therapist, because you're going to hear it one way or the other, whether they're not good or, and I always hear good things about Paritosh. So with that being said, I'd like to introduce Paritosh, our group facilitator, spiritual guru, guidance counselor, all kinds of stuff. Take it away, Paritosh. Introduce yourself. Who are you? You know, what do you do? What happened?
Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you, Tim, for inviting me. And it's an absolute pleasure and an honor to be a part of this. And this is something which I am involved with 24/7, whether I'm in the group rooms sharing with the participants, or I'm out and about in the world where I'm teaching yoga or meditation or Buddhism or non-duality or a spiritual life. It is something that I absolutely, absolutely love. Mm. So, you know, the question that you asked me is like, tell us who you are. Well, it's easier for me to tell you who I am not.
I love that.
And what I am not today, and that I have learned, is I'm not my mind and I'm not my body. And if I can live like that, and I can be the observer of the sensations and emotions that come up in my body, and I can look at my thoughts and be conscious of them, then I change what I like to call a compulsive reaction to life, and I can replace it with a conscious response. Mm. And that, I feel, makes all the difference, because life is life. It will happen. Mm. And my reaction, or more correctly, my response of it, determines my journey through it. Mm. So, you know, and the sooner I understand that, and the sooner I take responsibility for that, my life and those of people around me becomes easier, happier. That's exactly what I share. I mean, I don't like to use very many big sounding words or words from the world of therapy, because we all tend to use these kind of words. Mm. I like to keep it you know, very, very simple.
So the power for you is in the simplicity, not the complexity. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. That's a nice way to put it. And the power is in the simplicity. Mm. Unfortunate thing is, we are complex people. And we like to think that my problems are very complex. Now, if I give you a simple solution, chances are you're going to say, nah, you don't understand it. My life is more complex than that, and therefore you need to give me a complex solution, and only then I am going to be happy. And in the process, what do? I keep myself engaged in chasing those various arms, those various parts of that complex situation. And I try to keep on going, I'm going to handle this, and then I'm going to handle this, and then I'm going to handle this. And all the time, I'm focused outward on that, right? One quick way of the difference between how we approach it from the point of view of therapy and how we approach it from the point of view of spirituality. And this is something I share with all the participants. It's like, imagine there is a tree, and it has various branches. And a branch is anger. Another branch is anxiety. Another branch is depression. Another branch is addiction. So what do? We find specialists in, okay, I'm going to go for anger management. I'm going to go get some anxiety pills, right? I'm going to work with my depression. And I'm going to find a cure for my addiction and my relationship, et cetera, et cetera, right? So we keep on cutting down the trees. This is what is called top-down therapy, logotherapy, right? But here is the thing. When I have a plant in my garden and it is not giving me the right fruits, the right flowers, I don't work on the branches. I go treat the roots. And it is just the same with us. Like, what we are searching for actually in the branches lies in the roots. Now, if I can work on the roots and correct that, chances are the problems of anxiety, depression, addiction, everything, it falls off automatically. And that's the approach I like to take in recovery too. It's like, if I figure out who I am, or more precisely, who I am not, and I learn that, and I take away the ignorance of that, right? These problems, they fade away automatically. So that's, in general, is the approach I take. On the way, now it sounds very simple, but on the way we encounter the roadblocks. But what about this? And then what about that? What about that? But if you look deeper into those roadblocks, you will realize that they all stem from the same place of misidentifying with my mind and my body, and giving into my thoughts, giving into my feelings. Which I give the label of emotions without realizing that they are not built in. I built them. And reacting to life through the conditioning that I have. And when I keep doing that, that's what we call addiction. Or so, even a behavior issue. Right?
So the external appearance isn't the internal reality.
To
a certain extent, right? Like we're fixated on the branches, external. But actually, in actuality, when you say the roots, I hear the internal.
Absolutely.
The internal condition, because I can't help what you do.
Right.
But I can't choose how I respond. But depending on where I'm at, right? Like, depending on what my roots are doing.
Absolutely.
Kind of, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, but do we even realize that there is a self, or there is a root which is not my mind and my body? Half the time we don't even know that. We don't even realize that, because the moment you think of the word I or me,
well, it comes right here.
What is it? Take a moment now, right? And try to describe who you are, I am, and fill in the blanks, without using anything from your past. Can you do it? Nobody can. Because the moment you use language, isn't language part of your past?
Yeah, it's funny. Our last episode, we were talking to the guest. I was talking with the guest. You know, we kind of started going back and forth a little bit on the power of words. But it's not necessarily what it is.
See, power of words.
Right?
Words are very, very powerful. Wittgenstein said this, you know. The limits of my language are the limits of my universe. You cannot describe anything in the perceived universe without using language. Now, what is the language you're using? Your thoughts are language. Your expressions are language. Your body language. The words that you use. Right? Yeah, all of it is language, correct?
Yeah.
Now, what exactly is language actually? It's a box. It describes something. Right? Where is that box coming from? What does it comprise of? What is there in that box? All my past conditioning is in that box. And I do that unknowingly, unconsciously, right?
Yeah.
So when he says the limits of my language are the limits of my universe, words actually create your universe. That's the power of the words.
Yeah.
Now, if I look at the words that I use to describe me, to describe my situation, to describe the universe that I look at, am I not creating the world?
Yeah, 100%.
So every time I am doing that, I am actually the creator of my universe.
But if you really, this may be a left turn, I don't know. But if you think about it.
Three left turns will bring you back to the same place, don't worry.
All right, I got two left, this is my first. So I'll come back in a few minutes.
Right.
I get it, right? We have to have a language. We have to create a language.
Correct.
We have to be able to communicate, understand. I get all that.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, a language doesn't necessarily mean that's what it is. So, for example, we call pizza. I don't know, some guy named Paritosh 2,000 years ago. Pizza. What about if Paritosh said a few thousand years ago, whatever, said another word to describe that, I would be going into a shop right around the corner from here and say, give me a slice of that. So what I'm trying to say, I mean, I get it. Language, yes. And it does expand my universe. It allows me to, I get it.
Not just expands, creates.
Create. Yes. But does it necessarily mean that's what it is?
No, absolutely not.
And that's what I was talking about yesterday. We give words so much power. But not ourselves.
Take a step back. To give power to myself, I need to understand who I am. Society today, or our world today, is focused towards the identity of I that I create. Right? If you take Maslow's hierarchy, right? Right at the top of the triangle is what is called self-actualization. Now, when I say I, am I not looking at my actualized self? Who am I?
Oh, yeah.
Now, this actualization actually comprises of the dreams, the goals, the desires, the ambitions that I have created, knowingly or unknowingly, based on what I have seen. If you desire a beautiful car in the world, it only comes from what you know. You can't desire a Bugatti Veyron if you're not aware of a Bugatti Veyron.
Which I'm not.
Correct? It's as simple as that. So what I choose, whatever is my idea of being self-actualized, only comes from my lived life, from my experiences, so right? From the world that I live in. So even when I get there, tell me, if I am self-actualized, am I still happy? I got everything that I wanted. But am I happy now? Because I desired this. I got this. Now, the question is, am I happy? Now, the society taught me, get a job, get a family, get a degree, get cars and money and all the things, right? And I compared internally, unconsciously, I compared my own reality, my internal reality with someone else's external reality. So, oh, I'd be happy if I got that car and that job and that money and that life, right? And I got there. But I'm not happy. So what do I do now? I'm actualized. What do I do now? I try to be more actualized. It's like, oh, no, I'm going to climb that peak and then I'm going to be happy. So I go there. I keep doing that through the life, right? And most of the time we say this, right? You climb the ladder of success, and you reach on top, and you realize that it was leaning against the wrong wall. Recovery through spirituality is actually understanding that. That actualization doesn't give you the feeling of contentment or fulfillment. The flip of that is to realize that you are already complete by yourself, but it's the words which are making my ego, the conditioning that's creating a veil, a separation, which tells me or gives me a perception of separation. So it's not that I am separated from that reality. It is simply that I have a perception that I am separated.
Ego is not authentic. There's no authenticity in ego. Because it's kind of like, I look at ego as like it's all born in thought. You know what I mean? And thoughts don't necessarily mean that's what it is.
So that's a very Western perspective, Western philosophy perspective, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Ego is not necessarily... you are right when you say it's born in thought. But what I mean to say is that ego is not necessarily something negative. In the functioning, the way the mind functions, right? In Sanskrit, we say there are four parts to the functioning of the mind. It's called manas, buddhi, ahankara, chitta, which means your storage facility, manas. Buddhi is the intellect.
Love it.
Ahamkara is the ego. And then there is chitta, which is the consciousness. So in its working, the mind has four parts to it. Ego is one part of it. But there is also the intellect. Where am I placing my intellect? What is there in my storage? And what am I paying attention to? What am I paying attention to? When I learn to pay attention to the right things in life, right? I can bring the others in line. The ego functions for me.
How do I know it's right?
Your life. It's your life. It's your lived experience.
Okay,
it's not
gotcha.
About what is there in the book. It's not about who taught you something, right?
I gotcha.
Be open. See, in our recovery community, what do we say? Our first requirement is authentic. Being authentic or rigorous honesty.
Rigorous honesty,
right? If I am being rigorously honest, right, then am I not open when I say, okay, I don't know, show me. Correct? That's where my journey begins always.
But why is that so hard for people to say? So like we were talking about 5 minutes ago about simplicity. It's so simple to say, I don't know. But for some of us, or a lot of us, or many of us, always have to think up this thing up, like what I think you want to hear. So instead of going, I don't know.
See,
I come up with like, you know, 5 minutes later, I'm still talking. Like, I'm still going at it. You know what I mean?
So there are many reasons. You know, you can go the way of psychology. You can go the way of philosophy. And you can go the way of Buddhism. You can go the way of Vedanta as to why that happens. I'll put it in simple language. The difference between us and other living organisms, human beings and other living, we are problemed. We are born with what is called an intrinsic curiosity. Now, that's a superpower, and that's our downfall too, right? When a lion is chasing a gazelle, and the gazelle survives, the gazelle will breathe it off and goes back with life.
Move on.
Right?
Yeah.
I will sit in the cave, hide from the lion.
Oh, yeah.
And even when the lion is gone, for 20 days, I won't come out of the cave because in my thought, I am running that thing that maybe the lion is there, maybe he's not there, maybe he's gone, maybe he comes back. What am I doing to make myself safe? So our superpower that we had, our imagination, our curiosity, actually, when misused, is actually killing us, literally. Now, what do I do to counter that? See, there is something in me which wants to expand. It doesn't like limitation. And what do? I take a box of whatever label you want to put on that box, right? And I jump into that. So what am I doing? I want a huge office, right? So I own that office. Now I want a bigger office. What is it? It's a bigger box. So I jump into that. But there is something in me which doesn't like to be held back, right? So even that box becomes small. Today you get the entire planet. You will say, I want the moon. That's what we are doing, right?
Yeah, it's like
Then
never
you get the
enough. Never
moon.
enough. It's never enough,
It's
right?
never enough. So who are we by nature? We are actually unlimited. And when you take something unlimited and you try to put it in a box, what's going to happen? It's going to spill out. It's going to create ruckus all over the place. And that is what our problem is. Because we are trying to fix the wrong thing.
You think we're so focused on stuff, and I and we're missing the
Yes.
we're missing the mark that people like you and I and everybody listening, anybody that might be struggling, happen to catch this. You know, I hope there is just that one person. I know you're a one person person too. I just want to get that one person to hear this. Do you think that that's, you know, like that's our problem? Like
Look,
why?
look at it this way. I don't like to call them problems. I like to call them challenges. But look at it this way. There is only two ways we can create an identity for ourselves. It is by self-referral or object referral, right? Object referral means things that I own, all the things that I own, including my identity, my success, my labels, my intellect, all of that. Oh, I am a very intelligent person. I'm a very rich person. I'm a very handsome person, or I'm a very successful person, or I
Definitely
have a
handsome,
car.
definitely handsome.
I totally agree. Right? I would never disagree with you, Tim. But see, here is the thing. Aren't these all external? Right?
100%.
So
Nothing authentic,
the
really.
other way, when I refer to myself as my identity, is self-referral. But even the self-referral, what am I doing? I'm looking at the qualities of the mind and the body and saying, this is who I am. Like, for example, I'm a very authentic person. I'm a very happy person. Or I'm an anxious person. But I'm misidentifying all the time when I talk about the self. Who really is the self? Right? So when I use these external factors, which we do most of the time, see, in the West, we are more oriented towards the definition of success as defined by my environment. And then I get hooked on to that. So when I'm doing that, I'm totally not in touch with my authentic self. I have this, what is called the basic ignorance of who I am. And then I go around chasing that.
And
So
there's
even with when you say self-referral, we are using the wrong self, the self with a small s instead of a capital S. But if you realize who you are is not the self with the small s, but the capital S, right? That capital S definition of you doesn't need anything to feel complete, fulfilled, happy, joyous, free. Nothing. It doesn't, because that's the definition of it.
So how's it gonna, like, so we have souls, creative intelligence, you know, it really doesn't matter the label, sort of say. But
It
I
doesn't.
believe we're full of creative intelligence, and we come from creative intelligence, and we live in a man-made world. And when I hear that, you know, I'm not saying it's not nice. It's really cool. A lot of stuff is cool because that's part of that creativity in us, right? But for me, when you boil it, when it's all said and done, and boil it all down, it's still stuff. And I don't look at you as, you know, we've known each other for years. I don't look at you as stuff. I don't look at the people we work with that are stressed as stuff. And I also try to work that into my groups too, that we're not stuff. And stuff will never suffice. I mean, see, I know plant, don't you? I mean, people that are just so dysfunctional, but they're billionaires and they got all this stuff. But when they sit by themselves, it's like, you know, or whatever version of that. No contentment, no satisfaction, no pause, no calm, you know. So I think, you know, between creative intelligence, these beautiful souls. Because this is like the greatest scorekeeper of all time. And I don't believe, you know, our spirit, our human spirit, really keeps score of all that. It just kind of wants to know what the command is for today, right? Like, let's go, you know. You know, if you're listening to this and you're struggling, I commend you. I know you do, too. I commend you because despite how you feel, you're still seeking. You're still using that creative intelligence. Seeking isn't stuck. You know, we have that in us, that explorer in us, that seeker in us, that adventurer in us. Like, that's not stuff, you know? And so when we stop doing stuff, start bringing it back home to the mothership and start looking at why I keep responding the way I respond, right?
Mm-hmm. So look at the terms that we just used, right? I'm a seeker, right? And since time immemorial, there have been seekers. We say we are a seeker, right?
Yeah.
Even some of the religious books say, seek and thou shall find,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What happens? At the end of your seeking, what do you become? Do you become a finder? No. If you notice, and our language is so beautiful, if you actually look into the language, you'll find lots of clues in it. When you are seeking, at the end of your seeking, you don't become a finder. You become a seer. S-E-E-R.
Love that.
What does that mean?
Nice.
It means I see.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, do you see? That's the point. It's not, you see, the flip side of not having of having a lot of stuff is not I'm going to give away all my stuff or not having stuff. It totally depends on how you are identifying with the stuff, how you are attached to it. And that is why if you notice in most spiritual practices, good spiritual practices like Advaita Vedanta or Buddhism, the number one teaching is asangoham, which means non-attachment.
Love it. Yeah, I hear non-attachment. I hear freedom and non-attachment. 100%.
Non-attachment doesn't mean I don't care.
Mm.
Non-attachment doesn't mean that I'm going to go live in a cave. Non-attachment means living and beautifully enjoying this life.
Amen.
Right?
Yeah.
See, there's another word that I love. In the Rastafarian Bible, it's called the Kebra Nagast. In Kebra Nagast, excuse me. There is a beautiful word which is called liberty. Liberty. Liberty means living life to the full extent of your compassion. Look at this beautiful definition. Living life to the full extent of your compassion. Mm. Now tell me, if you're living life to the full extent of your compassion, where do you figure in it? Yeah. Compassion is connectivity to the world around you, isn't it? Isn't it your connection to fellow beings, to the world, to your own body and mind? Shouldn't you take care of that as well, right?
Yeah.
To the universe that is around you, to your society, to your country, to whatever you choose to call it. It's complete connection.
Yeah.
That's when you have compassion. It's not that selective compassion. I love you and you, but not that guy.
Do you think compassion frightens people because it makes them too vulnerable?
People don't understand half the time what is compassion. Mm. They confuse compassion, empathy. You started this conversation with words. Words have power, right?
Yep.
Words are very, very powerful. Yep. What it means to me, right? Compassion today has become a buzzword.
Mm.
Everybody goes around saying, I'm compassionate, I'm compassionate. Yeah, yeah. But look at it. In the name of compassion, aren't we enabling people?
100%.
Now, there is a problem. The path of compassion is not very compassionate. What I mean by that is very simple. I like to say it in Americanese. In Americanese, we say, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs. Right? Now, if I'm really compassionate about somebody in my life and I know that they are struggling with addiction and I am enabling them, what is a compassionate thing to do? Is it not to tell them that, listen, I love you, but you can't be in my life?
Correct.
How many people choose to do that? It's like, no, it's my son, my daughter, my wife, my husband. But aren't we realizing that just by our simple so-called act of compassion, I have actually taken away the opportunity for that person to actually heal?
So, like, true compassion, for lack of a better word, that's the definition of compassion.
Absolutely.
Not enabling, like you're talking.
Absolutely. Gotcha. So we have to be very careful how we lose, we use words.
But how's the average Joe, Americanese it, but how's the average Joe know what you and I are talking, that you and I teach, you know, in our class? Like, how does the average person know? Is that, like, unfortunately has to take the, you know, for them to come to a place like Beachway, then our family program gets involved, like our head therapist for the family program, you know, is that what it takes?
Well, there are a couple of things there, right? One is very simply that, unfortunately, sometimes we need a crisis in our life, or we need to hit rock bottom to actually be able to open our ears and start listening to somebody or something, right? That's one part of it.
Yep. Love it.
The other part of it is, which is our issue, and the Bible has a beautiful line in it. It basically says, "Speak to those who have ears to hear." Right?
Yeah.
People who have eyes to see will see. Mm. If I force somebody to do it, it's not going to happen.
No.
It's like in our recovery circle, we can't tell somebody else that you're an alcoholic, you're an addict. You can, but it actually doesn't mean anything until the person themselves agree that, yes, I have addiction or alcoholism or something, right? So first thing to do is not to go around and trying to push it on everybody.
Mm.
If there's this quotation, you know, where ignorance is bliss, it is folly to be wise. Right? So when ignorance is bliss, it's folly to be wise. You're wasting your breath.
Yeah.
Now, when people actually come to it and something happens and something opens their eyes, what happens is most of the time I am walking into that treatment center with my bag of conditioning on my back.
Mm.
I'm wearing that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm bringing that into the groups.
And
I'm bringing my attitude. And I've done this. I've sat in those chairs and I've judged everybody. Yep. Idiot. Yeah. You deserve it. No wonder I can't tolerate you, right?
Yeah.
And you know what? When recovery happens? Recovery happens when you start hearing your own story through someone else's lips.
Identification.
The moment you do that, you know that you are on the right path. But if I'm going to bring my intellect into recovery and say, I know...
Mm.
Chances are you'll take longer. Everybody recovers. The only point is, the only trick is to do it while you're still alive.
I love the magic, you know, in recovery. I love the magic in treatment. I believe wholeheartedly in treatment. Treatment works. There's no doubt about it. What I like, though, I find the magic, this intriguing intellect. For me, I always just keep it simple, too. Like, it's beyond knowledge. It's so fascinating, like, the space you and I are in, because we're people that normally wouldn't meet.
I would probably keep you waiting for 3 months outside my office.
Yeah.
I've done that, so it's okay.
But when, like, you know, when we're in our group sessions and teaching other, like, it's just unbelievable, because keep it simple, you know, addiction, alcoholism, mental health, you know. It's very difficult to understand if you've never experienced it. Because if you keep it simple, how do you understand something you've never experienced? So we spend most of our lives, as long as we're sick, explaining to others why we're doing what we're doing. And nobody understands. And all we do is get the finger, you know, what the heck's wrong with you? And all of a sudden you said there's a crisis. All of a sudden, here's Paritosh, here's Tim, here's somebody else coming in with their bag of conditions. And next thing you know, it's like we've known each other for a really long time. And the great work that we do and the clinicians do, because it's kind of like you found your tribe. You know, like, these people get me. Like, these people understand. Like, you know what I mean? Nobody's pointing a finger at me. And it just blows me away. And what a gift. You know, we've been given that we can cherish like that. And other people are creating all this stigma and, you know, oh, they're losers. You know, blah, blah, blah. I just had it, you know, the other day I was telling a drug addict in my class, she was really shaming herself and beating herself up and, you know, the power of words. I said, let me ask you, can I ask you something, please? Not purchase. Let me ask you in general. Yeah, sure. Does anybody think she's a bad person who knows her? No. Do you think drugs make drug addicts make bad decisions? Yes. I said, that's what's going on. You're not a bad person because we shame ourselves. Shame, and that word, there's words again. So keep it simple, right? Shame is I'm bad. And I totally disagree with that word. Like, and I try to do it, right? Try to build them up to where they can actually see their worth and experience their worth. Because everybody's got insight. Everybody's got something to put on the table. It's not like addiction, alcohol. That's not a moral issue. And it has nothing to do with, you know, God forbid, Paritosh is on the side of the road. And I can't, you know, I don't know, whatever. And this alcoholic comes in, go by and, Oh my God, not right now, Tim. You were that alcoholic that, like, you know, wasn't there for your kid's baseball game. No thanks. I'll just keep bleeding out and wait for the next person to help me. You know, it's amazing. Like, you know, like you were getting back to those little boxes we put ourselves in. Mm-hmm. We sit in these little boxes and we're all based on other people's opinions.
And add to it what you just said. Very fine point, but I'll pick on that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I see this very often in the rooms of the 12-step programs at times, right?
Yeah.
It's like we are just people who made bad decisions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Wrong. Here's my point of view.
Yeah, yeah.
A decision is like saying that I had a couple of choices and I chose the wrong one, right?
Yeah.
Addiction or mental health is a program of powerlessness.
Mm.
You are powerless to make a choice.
Mm.
Now, here is the danger to that. If I say that I made the decision, automatically I become liable for carrying the shame for that.
Mm.
But when I realize that actually I couldn't have made any other choice
in that moment,
I was powerless in that particular moment, right?
Yep.
There is no reason to feel shame.
I agree.
And it's very important to let that go and to understand that what powerless really means.
Mm.
Powerless actually means when somebody says to me, when you were addicted or alcoholic, or you could have simply made a different choice.
Mm.
And my answer to that is, what makes you think that I saw two choices?
Mm.
That's called conditioning. My conditioning only shows me one way. That is called powerlessness. That is true powerlessness. So I am powerless to begin with.
Mm.
And now if I realize that, can I let the shame of what I so-called did, let that go? Because if I don't, guess what happens? I carry that shame with me in my recovery process.
Oh, yeah.
And if you will notice at the fourth step, most of the people writing down fourth step, what are they struggling with? All the shame, because they're bringing up all the past things and they're saying, oh my God, I don't want to write anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to revisit that place. The thing is, the big book or some books, they call it character defects, right?
Yeah.
I don't call them character defects. I call them our defense mechanisms, which we actually learned unconsciously. Now I have a different relationship to that. If I call it a defense mechanism that I learned, why did I cry when I didn't get something when I was 3 years old?
Mm.
Because I was taught if I cried, people paid attention to me, and they normally gave me whatever I wanted so that I would stop crying, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So what do I do as a 50-year-old? I'm still doing that.
Yeah.
I'm crying.
Yeah,
Learn behavior. So do you call that a character defect? If you call it a defect, in today's world, there is a negative connotation to that.
Mm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Again, it's the same thing, power of words, right?
Yeah.
But if I call it slightly something softer, like this is my defense mechanism that I picked up, right? Now I can look at it constructively. Okay. Talk about simplicity, right? If you take page 25 of the big book, there is a solution. In that one page, I can explain the entire program to anybody.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
One page.
Yep.
See how it begins. It basically tells you what, when you see that it has worked in somebody else, then you pick up the spiritual tools.
Mm.
Correct? That means
yep.
somebody who has gone through it
yep.
has to work with you on that.
Yep. Yep.
Step one,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Two, what does it say? I have to undergo a process of letting go of the programming.
Coming to believe.
I'm not even going there.
Not
forget
going,
about okay, coming
okay.
to believe.
All
right? right? Yeah. Can I confess totally what all is going on with my life, right? Leveling of pride, we call it, right? Let's just stick to leveling of pride. Let's okay. not bring even the higher power into this yet.
Okay.
Can I level my pride and write down what my character defenses were? Okay. Third, it says, there's a beautiful line in that. It says, when we share that with somebody, I think page 75 says that, we may have had spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience.
Mm.
Which means what? It doesn't matter if I was religious, atheist, agnostic, or pagan, or whatever term you want to call it. At the level of belief, nothing works. When my belief starts turning into an experience, that's when the work starts.
Well, because it's, there's a change. That's spiritual
experience. Experience is personal.
Mm.
You see, a belief is common. It's like you tell me something, somebody else tells me something. I can believe it or not believe it, or I can follow it, whatever, wherever the belief came from.
Yeah.
But when it becomes mine, then it's personal. Mm. That's when the real change happens, right?
Yeah.
Now, go back, jump back to page 25.
Yeah.
What does it say? It says, our Creator has entered our heart and lives, which is indeed miraculous.
Mm.
Same sentence.
Mm.
I read it just a little bit differently. Our Creator has entered our heart and lives, which is indeed miraculous. The same spelling.
Mm.
Who's living through me now? I can say I have God in my heart, religion in my heart, spirituality in my heart, whatever I choose, right?
Mm.
No value unless it is expressed outside.
Correct.
Now, if I say that our Creator or a higher consciousness or a higher power or the creative intelligence is living through me, right?
Yeah.
Now, do I take ownership of whatever is being done? No, I'm the medium through which that creative intelligence, to use your word, or the power of the universe is achieving things through me.
Mm.
So I have detached myself from doership. Now, if I detach myself from doership, am I liable to the end result of that deed? No.
No.
It's like saying a knife is good or bad. In the hands of a surgeon, it will save someone's life. In the hand of a robber or a
criminal,
it will take lives, right? Is the knife liable?
No.
No. Now,
of course not.
Can I learn to put myself in that position instead of saying, oh, look at me, I did this?
Mm.
When I say I, then I'm liable.
Yeah.
The simple law of universe
is... Like you're attaching to it, right? You attach to it. As soon as I, as
to
soon
your
as
identity.
Yeah.
So when you do good, you say, I did good.
Yeah.
When you say, I did bad, you are liable for the shame.
Yeah. But when I give up all that stuff and just show up now and live now and become part of this incredible synchronicity, everything gets done.
Beautiful. All we are doing is putting up our hand and showing up. It's like, all right, I'm here.
Yeah.
What's next?
Yeah.
Notice, in this system, there is no search for, oh, I have meaning in life, purpose in life, I'm enlightened, I'm connected. None of that.
Mm.
Simple practice of non-attachment takes away this idea of I am the doer of things.
And I find that, there's so many things like that I find so fascinating, and I think that's where all the magic is in that space. Why is it when I live like the way we were just talking, everything works out fine.
Beautiful.
But when I start resisting, all I'm doing is creating more resistance.
100%. Whatever resist, it persists.
And I find it, I don't know, man, I just find it, like, for example, you and I, we're as old as we've ever been in this moment. Flip the coin over, and we're as young as we'll ever be in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So my version is, it's like the most courteous murderer I know.
I love that.
Because it allows you, me, you, everybody to be the best version of themselves every day up until we take our last breath. Because I can always continue to grow through my knowledge. I can expand my world through words and more understanding. And I can grow, literally, even though it's killing me, a day at a time. That's the space that I want to be in. You know, because for me, from my past experiences and all that chaos, I just kept getting my butt kicked over and over and over. And people would say to me over and over and over, Tim, just stop fighting.
See?
And I hate, like, I used to just be like, oh, you know, F you. You don't understand.
Again, it's again the words, right?
Yeah, the words.
Like, you use the word knowledge, right?
Yeah.
In today's world, most of the time I find that I confuse the word knowledge with information, with data.
Mm.
Knowledge, true meaning of knowledge, it comes from gnosis, right? To know, right? To know means there is no barrier between you and the object of your knowing, literally. That's called unity, ultimate unity, right?
Yeah.
So to know means no barriers, to be one with.
Yeah.
Okay. Literally, knowledge means to live like that. Living is knowing. To live is to know on the basis of what you know. Knowing here and doing something else is what creates the friction. And we have a problem with that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So ultimately, you, if you notice, to live is to know. And to live is to be. It's called being, right?
We're
called human beings.
Yeah.
What do we spend our time doing? Human doings. We are human doings.
Yeah.
So if
getting done, by the way. We're getting done just as much as it's getting done out there.
Right. So if you recall the great bard's words, to be or not to be, that is the question, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at it from the light of, in this particular light, those words actually have a whole different meaning. That is literally the question. It's like, are you being?
Or are you being done?
Or not, or you're being done. And sometimes you're well done, right? And you
that's for sure.
Murder the steak.
Oh, my gosh, 100%. Burn it all day. Oh, yeah. Oh, Lord. Hey, so I'm curious, man. What do you love about Beachway?
What do I love about Beachway?
Yeah.
So I worked in many different places, right?
Yeah.
What I love about Beachway is the focus on what we are doing. The focus is on the right place. It is actually meant for healing and recovery. It's not simply that we are trying to manage stuff and to get somebody to level of something and then we let them go. So, and I see that and well, it's always a two-way street, you know. People find what they find depending on their mindset. But the atmosphere at Beachway, and it is, whether it is the management, the therapists, the facilitators, they are all directed and aligned towards the same goal. You see, the opposite of addiction or mental health is not not drinking or it's connection. And we are creating that connection, whether it is in our aftercare program or these kind of talks that we are having, reaching out to the community. You know, management has had me do meditations and connect with the people. It becomes easy, and it allows me, and I'm going to speak for myself, it's like nobody gives me a curriculum and says, do this in the group. My groups are very free flowing, and the groups become whatever the clients want it to become. It gives me the freedom to work with everybody on a real time, one-on-one basis,
Love
right?
that. Yep, like
Nobody
that.
is stopping that, and everybody has a different experience,
Yep.
everybody has a different background. All of that is true.
Yeah.
So it's not like somebody is forcing you that this is our agenda. We are not running with an agenda.
Yeah.
We are running with a focus. In Buddhism, we like to call it, I like to call it, climbing with a view to the top. And that sometimes we get uber focused and we are going like this.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't do this or you
Yeah.
can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you climb with a view to the top,
Yeah.
you can go like this and you
Yeah.
can enjoy the journey and you can
Yeah.
smell the flowers
Yeah.
and you can enjoy that beautiful stream that is running.
Yeah.
And Beachway makes it possible. So the whole atmosphere
Yeah.
is like that.
Yeah.
That's what I see.
I also like the longevity of the staff too, from our clinical director, so over 10 years there, our program director over 10 years, who oversees a lot of therapists too, and is a phenomenal clinician. All the clinicians, they've all been there like years, and you and I've been there years,
I know. I mean,
or we have a restaurant on the property. Yeah, it's
I think
that
the chef has
nice.
been there
Eight
for
year,
that
yeah,
long.
Rocky, he's 8 years.
There you
It's just one of those places, right? It's like that space. And we're doing that up in New Jersey too. We went up to New Jersey to continue this journey, this commitment. And that's been about a year, a little over a year now. And I've had the honor of going up there too, and just bringing a certain, we have a certain culture, right? We have a certain philosophy, but we all have our little niche. And like you said, there's not that curriculum, because you're you, I'm me, but we're trusted servants. And I find that to be really cool and very special. And for me, I like the word sacred. It's a very sacred position to be in, because we're dealing with a lot of stuff, like a lot. And I used that expression before, the external appearance isn't the internal reality. So Paritosh and I, we do, I'm just speaking just from my own information, that we create a very safe environment. And when you deal with addiction, mental health, for me, you're probably not too far off from this. Like, I would say that has to be at the top of the focus, during group, is how do I create this safe space so Paritosh can be Paritosh and Tim can be Tim, aka client. Because when another client in the group moves into a position of vulnerability, honesty, willingness, it really inspires the other person, and we start, doing the frequency exchange, and it's really powerful. And that's why groups are a very, very powerful process. So if you're listening to this and you like what you heard us talk about today, that's the whole point of it. I don't need to say anything more about that. We're going to start wrapping it up now. So I just have a couple of little questions I like to ask towards the end.
Sure. Can I quickly
Yeah,
share a story before we come to that?
100%.
All right, this is one of my favorite stories, and most of my clients have heard it from me. This is a story about a turkey and a bull, right? And they were grazing. And the turkey asks the bull, it's like, hey man, I wish I could be as strong as you. And the bull says, ooh, why? The turkey says, I want to fly. I want to fly to the top of that tree so I can see the whole world. But my wings are weak and I can only go so far. So the bull says, here's what you can do. You can eat my droppings. You know, I'm very strong and there's a lot of nutrients and minerals in my droppings. So nibble on them and you will become strong. And the turkey says, all right, cool. So it goes and nibbles on the bull's droppings and within a week it's strong enough to fly to the lower branch. Within a couple of weeks, it's flying to the middle of the tree. And within a month, it's sitting right on top of the tree. The turkey is very pleased with itself.
It letting says, out a couple oh gobbles, God. I hope.
Right? So it is right on top, and it's feeling pleased with itself.
Mm.
But the farmer was sitting on the patio in his rocking chair with his shotgun by his side, and he sees a big fat turkey on top of the tree. He picks up the shotgun, blows away the turkey, dinner. So that was the end of the turkey. That's the end of the story. What is the moral of the story? I'll tell you.
The first
moral of the story is, look at the comparison. Turkey wants to be as strong as the bull. Isn't that what we always do? Look at somebody else and say, I wish I was like that.
Mm.
Second, the bull gives advice when he's not in a position to. And the turkey listens to that advice without realizing whether it's harmful in the long run or not.
Mm.
It does take the advice for some time, and it works, and it thinks, oh, yeah, this is what it is.
Yeah.
Isn't that what we are doing with our lives?
100%.
And the last and final moral of the story is, bullshit will get you to the top. It won't keep you there.
Oh, I love that. That's
it
the
won't
best.
Keep you there, yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes our perceived success fools us into thinking that we have arrived.
Mm.
And that can be our downfall, right? What is more dangerous than knowledge is the illusion of knowledge. And data and information posture as knowledge. And that's the illusion of knowledge. So when I let go of that, when I understand that, right, then chances are that I am on the path of recovery. I'm open, I'm willing to listen.
So is knowledge working you, or are you working knowledge?
Again, depends on what you're calling what knowledge, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I hope we brought you a phenomenal...
questions, go ahead.
Yeah, I got episode, and if you are struggling and you happen to come across this, 50% of the battle is just maybe reaching out to somebody.
Right.
And then once you can cross that line, I'm telling you, you'll take off from there. We see it all the time, right? Everybody, Mike, the hardest thing to do was to reach out. You know, I was talking about in the last podcast, like, some people are a little inquisitive and they're researching, they're poking around, and all of a sudden that little chat box comes up and it's like, you don't even know who this person is, but right away it's like, oh my God, close it out. Or, you know, hi, my name's Tim, my name's Perrick, can I help you? And you're like,
no, I got this, not for now.
Just if you're that far, what's the worst that can happen? Keep going. Just say, hey, you know, I was poking around. And you'll find that person. They're always out there. Your four-leaf clover is out there, but you need to keep going and just kind of do your best to push through. So what would you tell yourself where in your position that you're in today and the growth that you've experienced and just, you know, where you're at? What would you tell your younger self today?
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I'll tell you why. Living a life of regret, looking back, is a hindrance to progress. Where I am today or where anybody is today is your journey. The point is, at this point, are you going to take agency? Are you going to take ownership? Are you going to take responsibility of how you are going to journey through this life going forward?
Perfect.
It's not about the past at all. It's not that, you know, I can go back or travel in time and say something to myself which is going to change my life. No. I'm living in a dream if I think that I am going to be able to do that or I even should do that. My journey is the beautiful part of my life.
I used to get annoyed with people when they'd be like, it's going exactly the way it's supposed to be. You know, I seen like that 2-foot-long finger, and in my journey,
I don't say that it is going the way it is supposed to be. Of course, there are things in my past which are not very healthy or good.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do realize that. But would I go back and change it? Absolutely not.
I agree. Yeah. But I used to get annoyed with those people.
Right.
But
right.
Now, it is going exactly the way it's supposed to be. Otherwise, it'd be different.
You are responsible for it.
Right.
The way I like to put it is this. Responsibility transforms personality. 3 simple words. Responsibility can be broken up into 2 parts. Respond ability.
Mm.
Transforms can be broken up into 2 parts. Transcends form.
Mm.
And personality can be broken up into 2 parts. Personal reality. So when I study it like that, those 3 words are a direction, they are a summary, they are a goal.
Mm.
Everything fits in those 3 words alone. Responsibility transforms personality.
Favorite childhood memory?
What makes you think I've grown up?
Great question.
I'm still a child in the universe. I may be about 8,000 years old. And my plan is to die young as late as possible.
All right. I'm cool with that. I can relate to that. I'll take some of that.
And right now, my favorite memory is this. Is this one.
What's your favorite food?
My favorite food. That varies. I must say, for my body and mind, it's something that my mom taught me to make, and she used to make it beautifully. And it's a simple potato and tomato curry with plain rice.
Love
curry. It is home for me.
Yeah.
If I can have that, I'm home always. Yeah. So, yes.
What's your favorite Americanese food? So let's go from one extreme, from stewed tomatoes and rice, you know, curry, a bacon cheeseburger.
Absolutely not. I love a great steak. I think half of India will hate me right now for saying this, but, you know, I love a steak.
Yeah,
I can't deny it.
I hear you.
I love
steak. Is there a way they can get in touch with you if anybody wanted to reach out to you personally?
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely. Like,
yeah, are you on social media? I guess we'll leave it at, you know, social media.
Yeah, I'm on TikTok and Instagram as Paritosh, the non-profit, profit with PROPHET.
Okay.
On Facebook, it's my name, Paritosh Nath, and my numbers are there.
Yeah.
And I actually have classes that I do in the community, and it's free for everybody.
Love it. Whether you
are wanting to do yoga
or
meditation or Buddhism. So in this community, I do them personally. Media presence, not so much, except for my Sunday Buddhism class. It's on Facebook Live.
Okay.
So you can log into that. Again, no costs involved.
Love it.
And
cool.
Yeah, so I'm always working towards that. I'm trying to increase a little bit of my media presence. Whatever comes my way, I don't have a focus that I should be doing this or that. But whatever shows up, I do it, and I mentor people, I sponsor people.
Awesome.
So all of that is all part of my life.
Yeah.
In my life today, my life is 100% this.
Yep.
I don't make compartments in life.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't make compartments.
Yeah. Same for me. I'm all over social media. Just like Paritosh said, you know, my phone numbers are there, email. If you're not on social media, that's cool, too. My email is tim.r@beachway.com. Paritosh, thank you for your time today. Thank you for coming down the street to beautiful West Palm Beach downtown. We're very grateful. Until next time, my friends, be good to yourself. If there's somebody you need to talk to, feel free to talk to either of us. If not, we can connect you to somebody else. And until the next time, peace and love.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Tim, for having me.
Thank you, Paritosh.
Thank you.